Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to UFO Think Tank with your host, Alejandro Rojas.
Hello, it is I, Alejandro Rojas, with my little Chihuahua Tessa here. She's got my back. She's doing security back here, wandering around. You might hear her barking at some, you know, people that she wants to scare off to protect us. So no worries there. But anyway, thank you and welcome to the show. We got a special show today, something a little different. I know, you know, some of you who listen to the show often are really skeptical when it comes to the Stan Romanek case. And, you know, I can sympathize a bit, at least, you know, if I was an outsider looking in, I would want more information. And it's because I personally wanted more information that I was able to get more information. You know, I knew Stan, found out about him, was terribly interested in the case because I personally feel that the videos he's gotten in the past of UFOs are incredible. And luckily, you know, he invited me to help them out. And throughout the years, I was able to have my own personal, let alone investigating some wild stuff, but having my own personal experiences around Stan that I cannot explain. And I'll get more into that. But I'm not alone in this. Pretty much everybody who spends a decent amount of time with Stan, maybe even some people, the first and only time they hang out with Stan, they experience something. But often, if you hang out with him enough, you're going to experience something extraordinary. So we're going to talk to a lot of the people, many of, if not all of them, I knew personally before I even knew Stan or they knew Stan. And so either I introduced them or someone else did. They got to know Stan and become friends with the family because they're wonderful people and they're a lot of fun to hang out with. And then, boom, you know, bada boom, bada bing, craziness happens. So we'll talk about what some people have seen and what's going on there. So we'll get there in just a minute. So we've got several people coming on. But as usual, I want to get to some UFO news. So this week, UFOs in the news. If you go to UFO Think Tank, and you go to the website, you can see at the bottom of the website this information. If you're on the Blog Talk site, on the right-hand side, you can see the Yahoo Groups news there, and you'll be able to get the links and check out all of this because some of this constitutes a video that you may want to look at. One of the videos that most people are finding unconvincing, especially because it doesn't really fit the testimony, is someone's come out on YouTube and saying they have the Chicago O'Hare video. So you may remember a couple years ago a really big sighting where pilots and other ground crew over the Chicago O'Hare Airport had seen a UFO hovering one of the gates. It shot straight up into the sky, piercing the clouds. It was an overcast day, leaving a hole in the clouds. Well, somebody says they have video, and it's just a few seconds of some something floating around. But the person says that they're in a position where they can't risk their reputation. That's why they can't reveal who they are. And so they posted the video anonymously, reporting this thing to be 100 meters long and 700 feet from the ground, which that's the part that contradicts most witness testimony because the witnesses were saying it was more like a 20 to 30 foot object. that was more like 1,000 feet off the ground, or more. So that's where, and you know, the video itself does fit that angle. So go take a look yourself, see what you think. Some other things going on. The Telegraph. Now, the posting that I have here, it says UFOs may be a light show, voted taken over London. And I guess there were some light shows going on at night, but this picture is not from the night. It's actually from the late afternoon where there's still sunlight. So take a look at those pictures, and you see some interesting light phenomena happening in the clouds, and see what you think. Here's a real crazy story. AllNewsWeb.com. They got an anonymous letter from a lady who says she had some inside knowledge on Barack Obama preparing for UFOs and their arrival. She's got some interesting stuff in her letter. Certainly a UFO researcher or someone who's aware of the field who wrote it. Is it a hoax? Is it an April Fool's joke? Very possibly, but AllNewsWeb took it pretty seriously, and they thought it was interesting. And, you know, this is a new site, which actually does cover UFO stories occasionally. So you can go read that, see what you think there. Roger Marsh, I'm always talking about him. He's the guy who does the UFO Examiner at examiner.com. He has a story up. Really what he does is goes to the MUFON files, and he posts some of the reports that people have. And, of course, we've got some very interesting reports going on, and very often people will put in pictures or photographs or video when they make their reports. This particular incident that he wrote about most recently doesn't include any pictures or video, but some people in California who claim to see F-18s scrambled to intercept UFOs. So very interesting. You know, I got to remind people, too, on this UFO Examiner, some people are like, you know, well, he's posting stuff without being researched yet, which is true. You know, our investigators, he's posting the reports as they come. And I think that's a helpful service because he's putting maps together. He's doing a little bit of the footwork, not typically talking to witnesses because that's the MUFON investigators in the local area's job to do. But at least he's getting this information out because, you know, other people who have had sightings, they may see that and say, hey, I saw that same thing. And that's helpful for corroborating witnesses. And that's one of the reasons, you know, a big reason why we try to get people to look at the CMS. If you had a sighting, check it out, maybe some other people. A lot of people who have sightings for the first time who are skeptical about UFOs, even that I've talked to, will get a hold of me and say, did someone else see this? This is what I saw. And they even sometimes need some coaxing to tell them, well, you know, post your report online. You can be anonymous just so other people can see if there are we can see if other people have the same sightings. Uh-oh. There she goes. Get them, Tessa. But she's checking, or they're, you know, hesitant to put their reports online when, of course, what they want to know is, did other people see what I saw? Was I crazy? What did they think about what I saw? So a lot of people have that feeling, and that's why it's important to put reports up there. Reminds me of David Wisby, who may be listening. He's a local guy. And the Examiner had posted some information about a sighting he had at the turn of the century party, or turn of the millennium party in Washington, D.C., where he saw UFOs. And he's still just dying to get other witnesses to, you know, give an idea. What do you think it was that we saw, you know? And he found a couple other witnesses, but, of course, there are a lot of people partying in D.C. during that time and a lot of witnesses. So hopefully he'll find some more and be able to get some more information on that. But yeah, these reports are not finished yet. So when he gets information on the conclusions on those reports, you know, he'll definitely post them. Finally, more UK news. Of course, you know, I guess we haven't talked it for a couple weeks. UK has been releasing more UFO files, some of them debunked. One of them is terribly interesting. And this is a diamond-shaped object that people saw and took pictures of. And it shot straight up into the air, very similar to Chicago O'Hare. Well, the military got the pictures. Behind the scenes, there's lots of talk in a lot of these files, and that's what we found out mostly with the files that were released lately, that Britain was trying to keep a lid on this stuff. Britain didn't want people to think they were looking into UFOs. They're trying to suppress the fact that they're looking into UFOs. a lot of information about, well, we should do this, we should do that, and their main concern being the public around their research of UFOs. In this case, they said, well, we think that might have been a Harrier jet, but in these files you could see they're curious whether it's a Russian thing. They didn't think it was theirs. They didn't have any Harriers in the area. I don't even know that Russians, I think they have a version of the Harrier, but what the heck would Russians be doing sitting there in a Harrier hanging out, sitting still over the UK and then shooting straight up into the air? That doesn't make a whole lot of sense. So they were still mystified by what this might be. So more files out of the UK. Some other things. Lately, people have seen some strange lights over Rendlesham Forest. And actually, there is a video of this that you can go and watch. Rendlesham Forest, of course, being the most important UFO event in the UK. This is where, right outside of one of their military bases, which is a US and UK military base. Unfortunately, the name of the base has eluded me right now. But a UFO had landed out there. U.S. military went out to investigate it. They recorded their investigation, and you can hear their fascination and fear and wondering what this thing was. It was a triangular object with lots of glowing lights that eventually flew up into the air and was gone. And it was very well documented, as, of course, the military would do. Another gentleman went by himself in a separate part of the forest, and he saw an object on the ground, a black triangular type of object, kind of delta-shaped, about 6 feet long, hovering not far from the ground. He was able to walk around it for a period of time, touch it, before it slowly lifted into the air and flew off. So this was featured on Larry King as well, including the officers who saw this. And the UK were the ones who actually released the files on this with a Freedom of Information Act request. So very even more evidence for this case, you know, than possibly Roswell. So, and of course, this is called UK's Roswell. Also, Pink Floyd, more UK news. Guitarist Gilliam, you know, the most popular dude for Floyd. He has come out in support of Gary McKinnon. Gary McKinnon hacked into some government files looking for UFO material. Says he found some, including. He found a list of people who were listed as not human who were working for the Air Force. So that's, of course, very interesting. But anyways, this guy is set to be extradited. He's from the UK, broke into U.S. military files. Of course, they want to get him over here and throw him in jail forever. He's fighting not to be extradited to the U.S. to serve his time in the U.K., and it's gone back and forth. Mostly, it's not looked good for him, but some people are coming out in support of him. And interesting enough, Pink Floyd's going to play a concert in support of Gary McKinnon. So we'll see if he gets off on that one. So interesting stuff. Finally, I have been gone, and I think I really need to tell people why. What I've been doing the last couple of weeks. Well, I've been on a couple investigations, both of them with my cousin, who we're going to speak to in a minute because he's our first Stan Romanek witness. Now, the first thing I was off on, and you can see this on Earth Files, Linda Moulton Howe's website, we've been investigating some cattle mutilations. Investigator out here in Colorado, Chuck Zukowski, who lives south of here in Colorado Springs, home of NORAD and Air Force Space Command, and the Air Force Academy. That's just a side note. Really doesn't have anything to do with this story, I don't think. But anyway, Chuck Zukowski ran across a story of a cattle mutilation out there, possible cattle mutilation where the authorities in the area were fabergasted at what the heck happened with this animal that died. It had only its udders missing. Its sex organs were missing, a female, obviously. And they didn't know how it died because, you know, just removing those parts wouldn't typically kill an animal unless they were ripped off and it bled to death. But that wasn't the case. There's no blood in the area, nor is there blood on the animal from these incisions. Plus, these incisions, like happens in cattle mutilations, seemed as though they were cauterized. In other words, they were burned when they're cut to the point where they don't bleed. And many people speculate this is done with a laser, and that's why they don't bleed. You may remember Rambo lighting that arrow on fire and putting some gunpowder in it and ripping it through his arm as he lit the gunpowder. People are thinking, what the heck is he going to do, blow up his arm, rip off his arm and throw it like a Molotov cocktail? No, what he was doing was burning that wound so it would cauterize so it wouldn't bleed. So that's what he did. And that's what happens with these animals, that they're cauterized so they don't bleed. So really interesting stuff. A few days after we investigated this animal, it happened with another. This was even stranger because the ribs, the rib cage, the horcoso, the organs of this animal were completely missing. Here again, no blood. All that's left is his head, a spinal cord going to the legs, and that's it. Very strange. No blood in the area. No sign of any organs or any ribs. The authorities in the area once again being baffled. And there was a third animal, where this time this animal was also... I know the udders were taken, and I'm not sure on the rest of the details on that one because I really haven't been able to contact Chuck on that one. He went out on those last two investigations by himself, but Jason, my cousin, and I helped them out a week ago on the first. So Linda Moulton Howe, because MUFON isn't necessarily a reporting organization, if we find evidence, we'll write a press release, and especially compelling evidence, and put that out like we did with Stevensville. But typically, we let the press contact us, and we let them know about what's going on. And, you know, a lot of people will keep their pulse on what MUFON's doing so they can report on it. So Linda Moulton Howe, being probably the most prominent cattle mutilation researcher, was on these happen on the border of Colorado, New Mexico, in the Colorado side, and she's in Santa Fe in New Mexico, so she's not too far. I know the first animal she was able to take a look at. So we shared information with her, and she's got that up on earthfiles.com if you want some more information on that. So check that out. Otherwise, I did a ghost investigation last week. Haven't gotten anything fruitful out of that yet, but we're still looking at what we saw. So, you know, field work, people, if you want to get to the root of this, that's why I had done years of research until I finally decided I need to be an investigator. I need to talk to these people face-to-face. I need to get in the field, and that is terribly important because getting in the field is what gotten me these personal experiences. I hadn't had sightings when I really got into this as a researcher. Wasn't until a couple of years being an investigator that I had my own personal experiences. Now I've had several, including one or two with Stan, but I just can't reiterate how important it is to get into the field, because getting into the field is where you get this evidence as well. And that's what the scientists need to look at in order to turn the tide. You know, I think we are on the cusp of conventional organizations and scientific institutions looking into this stuff. All they need is a little more to go off of, some more scientific evidence. So we got to get out there and do our best to collect that. So get out in the field, people, and you can do that by going to MUFON.com and becoming an investigator. You know, watch the ghost hunters and see what they do. Get some of that equipment and go out and do that. You know, that's a lot of people were inspired by that. So anyway, let's get into Stan Romanek, guys. I've got Jason on the line here, so I'm going to pull him up. But Jason's my cousin, and just to let you know how he got in this, when I came across Stan's case, I investigated soon after I got involved a potential abduction incident, and I was floored. It was incredible. It really seemed to be the real deal. There was evidence here. There was... plus the other evidence that I saw with the case, I was floored, and I was, you know, finding myself a skeptical and careful investigator believing this case. And with all of that implies, and that was kind of scaring me. I was thinking, wow, you know, it's incredible that evidence like this exists. And so I brought my cousin in. My cousin had just gotten out of the Navy. He was going to school. He's someone I really trust. I've talked about this stuff with him before. very grounded, not apt to jump to conclusions, very scientific-minded, knowledgeable in those arenas as well. So I brought him on board, and he proved to be a great help to help me investigate this and help me come to the realization I wasn't crazy, that there really is something to this. So with that, he also started his own paranormal organization at his school, Metro State College, which is actually my school now too. So we'll talk a bit about that, but are you there, Jason?
I'm here.
The technology works. I can hear you great.
Good.
So how you doing?
I'm pretty good. How are you?
Not too bad. So let's start off real quick, if you want to give a plug for the Crypto Science Society, what that's about and why you started it.
All right. Well, the Crypto Science Society is a student organization devoted to studying all manner of strange and unusual phenomena. That's everything from UFOs to ghosts to Bigfoot and lake monsters, if we ever have the opportunity to come across them. And making that the results of that research available to the public. There's a lot of organizations who are unfortunately a little bit elitist with their research, and that's not fair. I also the other aspect of the student organization, because we are connected with the college, it lends a lot of legitimacy and credibility to it, and we have a tremendous amount of resources available to us. We also work with a lot of the paranormal groups or other interest groups in the area to support each other. It's all about a partnership and a network. So to that end, as you know, we sponsor Colorado MUFON on campus for their monthly meetings, as well as other various events. When they need a place, we can provide a venue.
It started with, I guess, us looking for a place for Stephen Greer to speak, and eventually he was able to speak at the campus and had a huge crowd, right? I wasn't able to make it.
We were in the Turn Hall. The Turn Hall seats about 400, I think, is the official maximum capacity, and we were well over that. We had to bring a lot of extra chairs in, some standing room only, to do a lot of crowd control for that one. But it was definitely a big draw and a very popular event. And Stephen's a big help for the disclosure.
Yeah, I've gotten criticism lately about supporting Stan's case, talking positive about the Disclosure Project, but come on. The public wouldn't know about dozens of these witnesses if it wasn't for Stephen Greer's work, 8 years ago or so. So even if you don't disagree with everything, hey, I'm sure people don't agree with me 100%. I don't agree with Jason 100%. Actually, probably 95%, though, now that I think about it. But that's a pretty high margin. We got the same blood, So... why don't you throw out the URL real quick for Crypto Science? They do have some of the really good EVPs done on a ghost investigation on the campus there once. So throw that out real quick.
The website is www.mscd.edu/tilde crypto. The tilde is the little squiggly line thing above the shift key. And if that's too complicated, it's really easy to just Google the word Crypto Science Society. It's the first thing that comes up.
Yeah, I've got the link on my website, ufothinktank.com, and I'll also put the link on my blog talk front page. Now that I think about it, I don't think I've done that yet, but I will. Anyway, let's get into Stan. We don't have time to talk about everything, so I'm going to have to, there's so much going on. But personal experiences is what I want to talk about. And if I'm correct, I mean, at least for you, the personal experiences you've had are these bright flashes, I think on two occasions, at the cabin and then once at our friend's house in Fort Collins. Is that what we'll say. I don't know if she'd want us to use her name.
Right. Right.
So explain, what are these flashbacks? What did you experience?
Well, when we were at the cabin, I think it was a Labor Day weekend. We were invited up there with the family and a couple other friends, and we were out. We were out at the cabin where Stan had been talking about the last time he spent the night at the cabin. Apparently, he had gone for a ride, so I was pretty nervous, and that was, I think, the first real hands-on experience that I was getting thrown into. So I was really nervous, and you know, I had done a lot of research, a lot of Whitley Strieber's experiences were coming to mind. You know, the contact case and a cabin. This is almost asking for trouble. So I was pretty nervous, but everything ended up pretty good because I think the second night we were there, it was. We had got into a discussion about Bigfoot, which Stan is a staunch skeptic about the Bigfoot phenomenon. So we were all giving him a little bit of a hard time, and we actually there'd been some discussion about some ways to contact Bigfoot or Sasquatch creature. So we were playing around, and we went outside, and we were doing some of those things, and all of a sudden. There were some anomalous disembodied flashes of white light off in the distance. Stan got really nervous once he saw them. He got a little almost panicked and saying that that's what he sees when they come. So he was getting really nervous then, which I was surprisingly pretty calm.
we were all with each other and...
Right. And I think that's one of the interesting things about you is the ability you have to kind of jump headfirst into things, and I, by default, must follow. So I think we got to...
Well, it took a lot of meditation to conquer my fear.
While these flashes started occurring, they seemed to be off in the distance and getting closer. And we started trying to assess what the source of these lights may have been, whether it might have been lights from the road. We're well away from the road, nowhere near any place where there might have been a car light or something like that. And I think we took a picture in the direction of one of these lights, and I think there was an interesting orb in the picture that we took, so we decided to head off after it. The lights got closer and closer. I think there was a situation where there were three of us standing in a spot, and there was a light that seemed to emit from in between us. Quick assessment of the source of the light was, you know, who's got a flashlight? Where's, you know, what are you doing? Where's your flashlight? You know, and none of us had flashed a light. So while we're arguing about the source of this light, suddenly, out of nowhere, there's a bright, almost blinding, extremely bright, brighter than a camera flash, coming from...
And this is dead of night. This is maybe 10, 11 p.m. in the spring or Labor Day. Very dark out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it was almost on cue. It was one of those things where we all happened to be looking at the right place at the right time. And boom, there it was, undeniable. And it lit up the whole other side of the cabin. And a quick assessment there, we ran around trying to find, is anybody over there with a camera? What's going on? Where is Stan? Where are we? Where is everybody? And it was, we were astounded to find out that Stan was nowhere near that area. Nobody with a camera was on that side. It was just us out there,
Well, and the flash, you know,
from nowhere.
Yeah. So I've experienced these flashes. You know, I was there with Jason when this happened. I had seen them in Stan's house previously and was taken aback by them. But in this case, like Jason said, there are three of us standing with our backs to each other. Flash in the middle of us, not extremely bright, but viewable. You know, we're all blaming each other. It was you, it was you, it was you. Where's your flashlight? And then we all showed each other, look, we don't have our hands near our flashlights. It didn't, to me, actually even look like a flashlight. So I was kind of, because it was a flash. You would have to kind of turn on your flashlight really quick. And then on the other side of the cabin, that was even brighter than a camera flash, I thought, because
yeah.
It was this white,
like
extremely bright light.
But non-directional.
And it's just a flash. Non-directional. Now, you, I had talked about, and you know, we had gotten some videos of orbs and seemingly orbs doing some weird things, and orbs are controversial. Hard to say what's going on there. But I do want to move on from the flashes to you actually then seeing kind of the source of a flash at our friend's house in Fort Collins sometime after, probably like a year after, huh?
Yeah, it was quite a time after, and I think it was, it was after a regression.
Yeah, so what did
Stan
you see?
Stan and I were walking along around the outside of the house, and...
And I think it was because someone saw a flash outside, and you two were investigating.
Right, we were going to see if anybody was out there with a camera or what was going on, and we saw a flash as we came around the corner. It's kind of dull, not too obvious. Came around the corner, went back towards the tree, and we were side by side. He was to the right of me, and we were directly side by side, shoulder to shoulder. And there was an explosion of light, really is what it could be described as. It looked like emanating from his shoulder. So much so, so bright that it actually blinded him. He like said, and looked down and like it blinded him because it was dark. And we started talking about like, holy crap, did you see that? What, you know, where did that come from? What's going on? As we were standing there, we took a couple pictures to see if maybe anything would come out in the picture. We turned around and a streak, almost like a luminous worm-ish sort of faded light came between us and zigzagged down the field and took a right and headed up the street to the side of the house.
Yeah. Pretty crazy. And to let the people know, and I should have said this earlier, to follow along with the story, kids, you can go to stanromanek.com, stanromanek.com, and on his site, you know, you'll see a lot of information. But if you scroll down to these blue box with these menus, you can go to a picture and video timeline. So there's a timeline of kind of when events happened, when this all started, all of that. You can kind of follow along there because some of the events on the timeline you see there are actually what we'll be talking about next with Stan's sister and a friend of his. So, you know, what years are we talking about, Jason? We're probably talking about 3 years ago, right?
Was it that long ago? I think only about 2 years.
Was 2 years, so 2007.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I should have taken better note of the times that you and I had these things. But, yeah, I didn't see the second event Jason's was talking about. But of course I was with him when we were at the cabin with those flashes that happened in between us and on the other side. And this is outside, you know, then Jason sees this streak and just so, you know, I trust Jason's word implicitly. He's not someone I have found to exaggerate things that happen. Nor is he someone we've had several. Now these are our shared experiences with Stan, but we've had other phenomena happen, you know, on our other investigations. And, you know, I've asked him, what did you just experience? And then he tells me, and it fits exactly what I had just experienced when phenomena happened. So someone. That's why I like to take Jason along on investigations. He's one of the people I would trust the most, you know. But anyway, I better move on because we got a lot of people to talk to. You can stay on if you want. And feel free to pop in and make any comments or questions. Or if you got to go, okay. Understood too.
What time is it?
But I'm. What's that? It's about 8:35. So.
Okay, I can hang on for a little longer.
All right, so I'm going to, and you will be unmuted, but I'm going to go on to our next set of witnesses, and this is Stan's sister. She was there when he had his first, seemingly first abduction episode, and if you go on the website, you'll see Stan woke up one night talking about seeing possum people. He had marks on his body. These marks fluoresced. And later there's a regression done that got some more information out. But he remembers, what he does remember is going to the door, hearing someone knock on the door, seeing his sister holding the door open, seeing these weird people that he thought had costumes on. And he's like telling us, what the hell are you doing with the door open? You know, close the door on these weirdos. It's not even Halloween yet. And it was close to Halloween. They kind of took him to the balcony. He's like, wait a sec, what are you guys doing? Was about to throw one of these guys off the balcony when that's all he remembers. And he remembers waking up the next morning and he had all this weird stuff on him. So somebody said, Dan Oakey, Possum People, good name for a band. That would be. Stan Romanek and the Possum People. They can have him be part of the band. He can play the cymbal or something. But let's see. I think I've got these couple of characters on the line. Hello?
Hello. Marcus.
Ann Romanek. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine. How about you?
Good, good. So I just talked about the one incident that happened, but there's also an incredible sighting that Stan had with, you can see pictures of this red orb that had harassed him for a period of time. But they had gone to this kind of lookout mountain with a lot of friends to do some sky watching, and this thing flew over them, and a lot of people saw this object, including Ann and the next gentleman we'll bring on, Mark. But Ann, I want to ask you first about what you remember that night that Stan says you were holding open the door. And this was, just so people know, this was what, 2000?
Somewhere around there at the beginning.
September 2001. Mm-hmm. Go ahead, sorry.
I don't remember opening the door, but what I thought was a dream now turned out not to be. I dreamt that there was three people at the balcony door, and there were two males, one at each side of this one female, and she had long black hair and a pinstripe suit, and I was arguing with them. I said, you cannot be here. I did not invite you, and I was saying, get out, and all of a sudden, I got very afraid, so I went to go get someone. And then I started dreaming about something else. Then the next morning, my brother's walking around, and I noticed some markings on his back, and he was upset with me. He said, you let them in. And I said, it was only a stupid dream. Well, find out it wasn't a stupid dream. So I find it interesting that all I remember is a female, which pinstripe suit, and two males, but I never saw what the males looked like in what I remember. But my brother also said there was the possum people, there were two males and a female.
Yeah, and you could see the picture of what Stan remembers seeing on the website, and he calls them possum people because if you go to the website, you'll notice these characters that don't look anything like what you may have heard about in some of the abduction stories if you research, because these things have big blue eyes. They are large, almond-shaped, and they have these noses that kind of come out like possums, and they have this real scraggly hair. Now, that's what Stan remembers seeing as these possum people. And, of course, as you've heard, Anne remembers something completely different. So very strange, although Stan remembers two males and a female, the female being the boss, and that's what Anne remembers as well. One funny thing was under a regression when they asked him, well, how do you know one's female? It's just something funny. He's like, she's got boobs, man. It's just kind of a little humorous piece that we like to joke about. But, okay, and moving on. This red orb, explain kind of that experience. What happened there?
The red orb over at
Daniel's Park.
Daniel's Park. Okay. Well, we went to meet my brother Stan up at Daniel's Park. We were going to meet there. Because we both had errands beforehand, and we got ahead of my brother, and we were.
Did you talk a little closer to your mic? You were louder just a second ago.
Okay, my voice is kind of going a little low.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay, we were going to meet my brother Stan up over at Daniel's Park, Mark and I, and we got there ahead of my brother. And Mark was over near, not too far away from the pavilion, in between the Odd House and the pavilion, there's a field. And he was
about what time of night was this?
I would say around 7 at night, around there.
7, but
it was
September, so it was completely dark then?
I don't think it was completely dark, no.
Okay.
It was just starting to. It was dusk, and Mark screamed, and I looked over at him, and above him was this object, and it was the size of a van, and I don't know how best to explain it. It was like a soccer ball, except it had octagon shape, like laser beams, making this design over this object. It looked like some sort of craft of some sort. And it was the most beautiful thing I've ever seen. It was pulsating. And at the bottom of it was different colors. And it was totally silent. And it freaked me out. I was standing there going, what the blazes is this? And I
how big did it look to you?
How what?
How big do you think it was?
It was the size of a van.
A van, and then how far away from you do you think it was?
Let's see. I'm just thinking, not that far away. It was maybe half a, maybe a couple yards away.
Wow. And how many people were you with when you saw this?
There was about, I would say about 12, 15 people.
Yeah.
And,
wow.
It was quite shocking and quite beautiful. No noise, very quiet. What popped in my mind is that it was showing off. And I don't know why that popped in my mind. But I couldn't believe what I saw. And I go, it can't be. It can't be. Oh, my God, it is. And I didn't know whether to run, whether to stay. I started running in circles. And then my friend Mark brought out his LEDs on a chain, some lights, and started swinging like a lasso above his head. And this object started going up higher and over Mark's head and then down lower after they passed Mark. I guess they thought Mark was going to hit him. And Mark was doing this funny dance. It was hysterical. And I'm going, what are you doing? And he says, I'm calling them back. And I started chasing Mark around in circles. Boy, did he get upset. And then after we saw it start go down in the distance, I says, well, my brother shouldn't be far behind. Sure enough, as if on cue, my brother pops up, Stan.
Mm-hmm.
And find out this thing followed him up the road. And then it cut down over the pavilion. So It was quite amazing. It was the most beautiful artistic object I've ever seen.
Yeah. You know, Mark is over here trying to call it back, obviously not seeming too afraid of it, but your reaction and I think every other people's reactions were not the same as Mark's, right?
No, Mark is unique.
How were the other people reacting?
There's this one person who, before this happened, he was bragging how he would like to see a UFO, and he had a telescope, and he was just bragging. And then when he saw it, he started running the opposite direction. And then you never know how you're going to react to something. You think you're going to react a certain way, and then when it happens, you go into shock mode, and you don't know how you're going to react. You can react the opposite direction. I mean, I wanted to hightail it out of there, but I didn't want to leave any of my friends or family, so I'm going to be over there trying to help. But I just didn't know what to do, actually. I was just shocked. That was so unexpected.
Yeah.
And
well, thank you. You know, I know you have a lot more experiences that you've had and that you could share, but unfortunately we don't have a lot of time because I want to bring quite a few more people on. And in fact, let's bring on Mark, if you don't mind passing Mark the phone.
I'll think about it. Here he is.
Thanks. You know, someone in the chat is, hey there. And Mark, this is for you too, because I'm sure you kind of chuckled at that part. Someone in the chat was talking about how girls can't measure distance because a couple yards is pretty dang close, and her apartment is larger than that. So how far, in your estimation, let's see if your estimation is different, was this object from you all?
I would have to say in distance.
Oh, and can you talk louder into the phone?
Alejandro, can you hear me?
It was about treetop level, but I would say 100 yards.
Yeah.
Maybe not. No, wait. No.
Hey, Mark, can you talk louder into the phone? We can barely hear you.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was going to say 100 yards, but that's too far away. But it's really more like probably 100 to 200 feet, maybe. I mean,
100, 200 feet, that's still pretty close.
Could I interrupt?
Yeah, go ahead, Jason.
If I could, rather than having people speculate on distance, maybe it might be useful to just give a reference to the size of the object on the horizon, or say if you were to hold out a coin or something like that at arm's length.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
How the size compared to that? Because it is extremely difficult to speculate on size and distance of anything, especially in a black backdrop.
Still, I think it's interesting perceived distance because it perceived it to be pretty close. But that's a really good point, too. If you were to hold out your arm, at arm's length, how big was the object? Like golf ball size or tennis ball or how big?
I'd have to say it was at least grapefruit size. At least
grapefruit. Mark, if you could talk louder, I could hear you when you came on, but now we can't really hear you.
Grapefruit size.
Okay, that's better.
Okay, sorry, I have to.
So. Okay, so Mark, you were the guy with pointing the lasers at this thing, or the LEDs.
Yes.
And what were you trying to do?
I was actually swinging them over my head. I had them on the end of a chain, and I had a bunch of different colors attached to the end of this chain. So I turned them all on and started swinging it above my head. As Ann mentioned, it at that point stopped going at a straight line. Kind of went up a little bit over my head and dropped back down and kept going. And then Stan started asking me what it was I was doing. I said I was trying to get it to come back, and at that point she started chasing me, trying to get me to stop.
To get you to stop?
Yeah. It didn't come back, of course, and it just kind of kept going out of sight or further away. At that point, I went over to Gar, who happened to have his telescope, and he had to reset it up so that it would look at, you know, something that was much closer, because at the time
mm-hmm.
he was looking at stars and stuff that was farther away. And at that point, we were able to re-get the object on the telescope and be able to watch it for a much longer period of time, even through the...
What did it look like to you?
It was, it had an underlayment, it was round, and then underneath the lighting part of it, it had like a soccer ball. Ann said that it had like light beams connecting that. I don't remember the light beams, but I did have a very beautiful, colorful red, orange, yellow going up and down the side. And as it was pulsating. So it was
mm-hmm.
Quite interesting to actually witness. And
yeah. That's very similar to Stan's description, and you can see an artist rendition on that site that I gave you, Stan Romanek's site. Now, I want to go to another sighting, the first UFO sighting that you had with Stan. And I know you guys were driving together in a car, and you saw something pretty close to you. What did you see, and where was that in relation to you?
Okay. Well, I kind of have to preface that by saying that this was the first time I had ever seen an unusual object in the sky.
Mm-hmm.
This was still down...
This first
like
incident,
another,
which was...
The first incident was down at Daniels Park, and it was like four lights going through the sky. This was, you know, something that I had my telescope set up, or my night watch scope set up for, and I saw four lights going through the sky, blinking on each corner. And it stopped next to a star, which I thought was very unusual, of course, because planes don't do that. Even helicopters don't just stop. You know, they have to have a certain amount of time to come to a halt.
Was Stan there when you saw this?
Yes.
Okay.
Stan witnessed it for himself through the scope, and then later he was, you know, he kind of questioned it a little bit. I don't know if he ever came to any conclusion as to what it was he saw, but at the time he said that it did stop for him next to a star as well. Then another friend had come and started watching it, and it went out of sight into the distance over the horizon.
Uh-huh.
Then that same night, it was about 2 o'clock in the morning, I would guess, maybe a little later than that, maybe. But Stan was driving his van over on Hamden, coming up over the hill towards Wadsworth, and he said, what the heck was that? And I said, I don't know. What are you talking about? And he says, something just flew over the van. It's on your side now. And so I rolled the window down so that I wouldn't be seeing any reflections off of the dash or anything else. And I looked at this object that was like a cluster of balls that were just hanging in the sky. And it was about 10 foot above the power line, so it was way up off, you know, way up in the sky. And it was just dead still above the power lines. So I tried to get other people to see it. Ann was in the back. There were tinted windows. She couldn't see it. And Stan didn't see it long enough because he was driving to make any kind of a determination for himself. And but I believe, I mean, that's just my personal opinion, but I think that night it tagged the van so that it would be able to, you know, later come back and determine who the van owner was, and then.
Well, what happened to it?
Well, Stan actually almost came to a stop over the crest of a hill, and I was concerned that we might get rear-ended if he didn't pull over or whatever. So I said, you know, either pull over or go around so that we can get a closer look at it, because there's kind of a road that goes inside there. And he decided to go off of Wadsworth, off the off-ramp, and down and around and back up that street. By the time we got there, it was no longer there.
Okay.
Yeah,
well, I got to get moving on because there's other people that I need to bring on. But one last thing I want to mention is that you've had a UFO video night where you show documentaries and stuff for many years. And then you were friends with Ann early on, became friends with her again, and she started coming. When did you start doing those shows?
I believe I started back in around 1985.
Right. So then Stan started coming to him, and he, until these experiences, was a complete skeptic, right? He would make fun of you guys.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he would definitely, you know, give us a ration of, you know, you guys are nuts, you guys are crazy, you know, I don't know what you guys think you're, you know, doing, but, you know, this is totally nuts and stuff. But we were able to get him to go a couple times because I guess he liked the food. So.
Okay, great.
Anyway.
Well, thank
yeah.
you, Mark, for sharing your experiences with us.
Sure.
I'm going to bring on another couple other people. What's
yeah.
that?
Well, I was just
so
saying that
thank
I've
you, guys.
More. Okay, you have a good one.
All right,
I'll
yeah, I know you. Yep, see ya.
Okay,
so I'm going to try something just a little different. Now we're going to call a couple people because I have the technology to do that. And the next person we're going to call, his name is Don, and he experienced something that is related to a completely different phenomena than UFOs. And if you go to Stan's site, you'll see a link that says equations. And Stan has woken up in the middle of the night, or not only that, he's also done this under regression. He's written equations that baffle physicists that are very complicated equations. We'll talk to a physicist in a little bit about that. But let's talk with Don because he's got an interesting experience where he kind of saw this happening.
The number you are calling does not accept unidentified calls. If you are a solicitor, please hang up now. Otherwise, please enter the 10-digit telephone number you are calling from. The number you are calling does not accept unidentified calls. If you are a solicitor, please hang up now. Otherwise, please enter the 10-digit telephone number you are calling from.
Worked fine in my test. Here we go.
Hello?
Don, hey, it's Alejandro.
Hey, Alejandro, how are you? How are you doing?
Doing pretty good. Thanks for being on the show.
You're welcome.
So we talked to a few people, and I let the audience in a little about these equations that Stan has drawn. And Don, now you're someone I think I met through Mark's UFO video shows, and we just talked to Mark.
Oh, did you? Yeah. In fact, that's where I met you. That's where I met Stan and a whole bunch of people at Mark's UFO video night there on the first Thursday of each month.
Yeah. So I knew you before, you know, you started getting involved with all of this stuff, and then you started having experiences, and in particular, I want to talk about the night. You spent the night and saw Stan, you know, in the middle of the night.
Yeah. Stan and Lisa love having company, and they, you know, love having people over, and I was in the guest room sleeping. Lisa came in and woke me up, which I'm a very light sleeper, and the first thing she said was, "Don, he's writing again." And I knew exactly what she meant. I followed her to where Stan was at the edge of the bed, in the dark, writing away, scribbling very quickly. He was talking to someone, and there's nobody in the room, but he was speaking to something or someone, making certain comments like asking for clarification. And at one point, he said, but there's not enough room. You know, he'd already been writing for a while, and he said, there's not enough room. He finally wrote one more little bit and then went to sleep. So that was, I was really afraid to go near him and interrupt this process because I had an idea of what was going on. So we stood in the doorway and didn't want to approach too closely. The odd thing was in the morning, Stan was a little bit perturbed because he thought one of his stepdaughters had sort of spilled the pens and pencils and didn't pick up. And what actually happens is Stan gets up, I guess you could call it sleepwalking, but he'll go rummage around for a pen. He'll grab paper out of his printer, and he'll go back to the bed and write. And he writing very purposefully and very quickly, almost like one of those electronic plotters, and you know, sort of conversing with someone or something that wasn't in the room. So in the morning we looked at it, and it was very mathematical, very technical looking. But the bottom, the last line, which I think after he said, "But I don't have enough room," mm-hmm. contained some. Characters that were really foreign to me, and I think between yourself and all our friends, we found out that it was a rare form of ancient Aramaic.
I didn't realize that that was the one, and I get to take credit.
That was September of 07, I think.
'06.
Anyway, I wrote an affidavit stating that I witnessed this. The odd thing was, next time he was hypnotized by Dr. Sprinkle, he was saying, "Missing piece, missing piece." And Dr. Sprinkle said, missing piece of what? And he says, of the equation. And if you'll remember, Stan was handed a piece of paper. First he was asked, can you tell us what it is, or couldn't you write it down? And he said, both. So he was given a piece of paper with his eyes closed, and this is on film. He completed the equation. He drew some kind of a cube, and he added some mathematical characters on it, and I guess that completed the equation that he began that night. Because that hypnosis session was maybe months after that incident, September of 07.
Right.
Actually, it might have been 06. I'm not clear on it, but my affidavit states the exact date it was. It was September 28th, but I don't recall if it was 06 or 07.
Yeah, I'll have to look. I don't think – oh, yeah, here it is. It's on the website. September 06.
06, yeah.
Yeah, so it's on the website.
Mm-hmm.
Well, cool. Thank you, Don.
You're very welcome. Oh, don't forget to talk about the flashes everybody sees.
Oh, yeah, we were talking about that earlier. So you've seen the flashes.
Oh, yeah, in a big way. Sometimes I'm talking about Stan to friends, especially in the beginning when I was very excited. I still am excited about it, but such an amazing story. I'd share with people, and flashes would appear as I was talking about it.
And wow, that's incredible.
You know, in the RV down in Hooper, Stan was alone inside the RV, and there's flashes coming from inside the RV that we rented.
Yep, actually, I saw that one too. Where
that's right, you were there.
Stan's taking a nap in the RV, and little blue flashes inside of his RV.
He said he had a headache, and it's like he was playing with a flash camera.
Yeah, and we're gonna talk to Heidi in a minute, and she had a really interesting experience with those flashes too.
Yeah, she's very involved with this case.
Yeah. Well, cool. Thank you very much. We're gonna talk to. Actually, I'm gonna call up Claude next. And ask him about these equations.
All right, Alejandro, thanks a lot.
First, I get to brag a little bit, though, because I forgot that this was the one that Don had seen written. And like you said, it's the middle of the night. He writes this thing pitch dark. Sometimes he's written these things backwards, and these are legitimate, complicated, mathematical equations. I've talked about electromagnetic. We'll ask the scientists about that.
Yeah,
but on one of them,
valid equations.
Yeah, valid equations. One of them, on the bottom of the paper, he wrote this what looked like gobbledygook. They had, you know, someone suggested it's some kind of ancient writing. So he sent it to a university, think of Oregon, and they were taking a long time to get back. I got impatient, so I put my brain power on this one. I get a break because I'm proud of this one. So I did a bunch of research into ancient writing, and it was really hard to discover because it didn't look like, you know, Aramaic, it looks a lot like Indian writing, you know, that writing that you see that's real pretty and flowy. But I found a line of Aramaic that was a lot like squares and dots and lines, kind of. It wasn't, at first I thought it was maybe cuneiform, but it is a lot different than that. But I found something kind of about the same period. And so I was able to decipher from it what it meant. And it actually spelled it out, propulsion.
Yeah,
there is an H that was written because there was no H in that language.
Mm-hmm.
So, and there's no H in propulsion either, but it wasn't spelled, you know, exactly like propulsion.
It was phonetically spelled out, sort of.
It was PR, then we don't know the symbol, PULS, the H, then we don't know that symbol, and then N, which of course, and the two symbols that we don't know are exactly the same, which must have represented the O or maybe a U type of sound.
Yeah, I thought that was cosine or something like that.
Yeah.
An equation.
So it was propulsion. And then I think it was Heidi that there's a zero and a dot, which of course, 0 point. So
0 point propulsion.
Yeah, very strange. Pretty cool stuff. And actually, your affidavit is on the website there too.
Oh, cool.
Yep.
Okay, Alejandro, great talking to you.
All right, you too. Thanks. I'm going to call up Claude next.
Take care.
You too.
Bye.
So let's call the physicist. The physicist is someone I knew also before I knew Stan. He's actually been on my show before talking about the science of the paranormal. Claude, you know, worked at MIT, went to school. He's, you know, real... got a lot of credibility. Anyway, I knew Claude as well. I met him at MUFON. He came to speak for a MUFON symposium. He actually had a workshop, and his workshop was very popular, so we brought him on to speak that next year, and people loved his talk. People loved it. It was the science of the paranormal, including the science of UFOs. You can listen to a show that we did. He was actually my very first UFO Think Tank radio show. But he became interested in the equations, started looking into them, became friends of the family. Everybody who looks into it becomes friends with Stan and his wife, Lisa, because they're wonderful people. And he then had experiences himself, because I'm telling you, people that hang out around this guy have their own experiences.
Hello.
Claude?
Yeah, I'm here.
Hey, it's Alejandro. How you doing?
Oh, must be a time delay. I'm listening to your web show. Okay.
Yeah, there is. Just in case you say bad words, I can cut you off.
I'll try to behave myself.
Well, cool. The first thing I want to talk about.
Great show.
Thank you.
Yeah, go ahead.
So we just talked to Don Milan, who had witnessed Stan writing these equations. So the first thing I want to ask you as a professional is, what the heck are the equations about?
They have to do with the vacuum energy. You know, space is filled with this fluctuating energy called the zero-point energy, and a lot of them have to do with the nature of that energy. Some of them are not familiar. They're not part of conventional physics, but they're probably very useful in terms of understanding how you could get control of the vacuum energy and do things with it. And one of them, the one you're talking about, the zero-point propulsion equation, actually kind of tells you how to warp space, and then you would sort of fall into, creating a wormhole that you then would fall into, and it would propel you all by itself without you having to blast any rockets or anything. And, you know, so it's a way of engineering space-time in a very elegant way, and you could go much faster than light, according to some of these equations. So they seem very relevant to Stan's case.
Wow. See, what you discovered about those equations trumps my Aramaic thing.
Well, it's all connected.
Yeah.
It's all connected. Not only that, but one of there's some symbols that show up over and over again in his papers that show, you know, he has these two cubes, one inside the other.
Mm-hmm.
And the outer cube shows a star map, you know, where they supposedly are coming from, and the inner one shows our solar system, and in between is a little tube. And they're constantly showing this little tube with a spiral in it that looks kind of like a wormhole.
Mm-hmm.
So that is consistent with these equations. They seem to be suggesting that, you know, this wormhole aspect is part of how they get around.
Yeah, incredible. Now, there's a video on Stan's site, too, on these equations. Well, there's a video of Claude talking about this, but also another physicist professor, Jack Kasher, Dr. Jack Kasher out of the University of Nebraska. There's a video of him talking about these equations as well, so you guys could look more into that. But you got involved looking into these equations, and then you as well have had an experience around Stan, right?
Yeah, and I'm not the kind of person who's had a lot of paranormal experiences or sightings, but the second and third UFO I ever saw in my life happened when I came down and spoke at Hooper at the UFO Watchtower a couple summers ago, right on the same day that Stan gave his first big presentation there. And we went outside on Sunday, I think it was, and Stan had just photographed one and was looking at it on his computer. And as I'm standing there, Rick Nelson is behind me and sights something else in the distance. And several miles away, I would say, were two white UFOs, one hovering over the other. And we watched them for, it seemed like, several minutes, very clear daylight sighting. So that was my second and third experience of my whole life, and I was standing right next to Stan.
Right. I think there were quite a few people that had watched that with you all.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's right. Yeah.
What was the nature
of...
Oh, go ahead.
Well, and the other strange experience I had with Stan was Halloween a year or two ago. Stan had a Ouija board, and I'm very uncomfortable.
That was my Ouija board.
So saying, oh, okay, well, see.
I got some criticism
saying,
for bringing it. All in the name of science, though.
So. I've probably seen one movie too many, you know. So I was staying across the room or out of the way, and I didn't want to have anything to do with it. But then as toward the end of the evening, people said, well, Claude, ask it a question, ask a question. So, okay, well, I had a question. And then they said, well, it's not moving, Claude. It's not doing anything. We think you have to come over here and put your hands on it. That's not what I wanted to hear. So I went over, and what Stan said is, don't put your hands on it. Hold your hands about a half inch or inch above the planchette, okay? Now, normally on a Ouija board, you put your hands on it, two people, and it moves around, you know, and selects letters. But we held our hands above it, and it very slowly moved around for maybe 15, 20 minutes, and it picked out an answer that actually made sense to me. So, you know, I cannot explain how that planchette moved on its own, but I was there.
Mm-hmm.
So those are my cool stories with Stan.
Perfect. Well, thank you very much for your stories and some explanation on the equations. If anybody wants to hear more about Claude, you know, check out that earlier interview I did. It was the very first one, and it was excellent. You'll be happy to know, Claude, that I think over 2,000 people now have listened to that. And you can also, Claude sometimes goes to other conferences, so you can probably find a video of one of his lectures online somewhere, too, and I would highly, highly recommend one of his videos. One of my favorite people. So thank you very much for joining us, Claude.
You're very welcome.
I've got like 15 minutes and a couple more people to get on, so I hate to rush you out the door, so to speak, but thank you, and we'll be talking to you.
Right.
All right. Well, our next guest, and I don't have to dial this person. Heidi, are you there?
Yep.
Hello?
Can you hear me?
Oh, you're breaking. Oh, now I can hear you. Great.
Okay.
So cool. Welcome. Hello, Heidi.
Hi there.
Heidi's another person I think I knew before all of this stuff. And I say that because it adds some credibility. You know, some people are thinking, you know, well, how do you know these people aren't all tricking you? Well, I knew these, you know, Heidi's not Don, Claude, not part of any kind of conspiracy, because I knew them prior to all of this happening. So, and now Heidi, I think I would like to start with you. We've talked about those flashes, and you have an experience that might lend some insight into those flashes. So if you would share what you saw in the bushes and what happened and when.
4th of July in 07, we were over at Stan and Lisa's house, and we were inside. Stan thought he saw someone outside. Anyway, just to make a long story short, Stan and I ran out the back door while everybody else ran out the front door, and there I could see the top of the head of this little being behind some bushes that they had. Stan went running out right behind it, and I was running behind him. It ran around the corner toward their gate, and all of a sudden there was just this blinding flash, and it was gone immediately.
This little something that was behind the bushes.
Pardon me?
And what was gone is this little something that was running behind the bushes.
Exactly.
And we actually have a little bit of insight. I don't think this picture is on the website, though, of what was behind the bushes, because someone took a picture of you and Don. We talked to Don earlier. I think you were listening in.
Yes.
And behind you two, you kind of see, and this is where there's like this link with the ghostly type of stuff, which I'll ask you about next. You kind of see this apparition of a little being behind you, right?
Yeah, it's hard. It's difficult to say whether it's, you know, an apparition or if it's actually present at that space, you know, in that space at that time. But there's definitely a little being there.
Yeah, pretty
strange.
And we
didn't see it at first. I mean, none of us saw it. Of course, nobody saw it when they were taking that picture. And we didn't see it even in the picture until later when it was lightened up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, really, which is something that we saw, you know, Jaime Masson had done that, lightened up some pictures and saw some weird things behind that. He's an investigator out of Mexico. And so that's why we tried that on a few pictures, and that's
uh-huh.
what they got, huh?
I think
they call that little creature Liberty.
That's right. Since it was taken on the 4th of July, that's the name
yeah.
it was given.
So speaking of kind of that mixture, because that was such a strange thing, and to me it almost reminds me of a ghost picture, except it's not a human form behind you guys. It's a, what you would call a gray, what people see, except for just kind of warped and ghostly. But speaking of ghostly and poltergeistly, you've had other experiences inside of Stan's house.
Oh, lots, yeah. It's not at all unusual to see little teeny orbs flying around in there. Several times I've been present when the faucet or faucets, it's happened with more than one at the you know same time, will all of a sudden go on, and there's no one anywhere near it. Lights off and on, you just never know what's going to happen when you're over there.
Yeah. Now, have you ever seen a UFO with them?
Yes, numerous times.
Uh-huh.
Numerous times. I did see the one that Claude mentioned at the UFO Watchtower, and
uh-huh.
Which actually were there were two of them. And then...
And those pictures, actually, Stein got a picture of those, and you can see those on the website.
Yes, uh-huh. And then the one at St. Cajetan's when he spoke there. And then I wouldn't even, you know, probably a couple dozen over the last few years just sitting
wow.
out and back sky watching, you know, just
mm-hmm.
checking out the sky at night.
See, now here's what I've been with Stan, checking out the sky at night like you. And what I saw one time, you know, all of a sudden it looks like just a bunch of satellites, one after another. And I call them satellites because they moved in a steady, straight direction. There were lights in the sky, small, star-like, just like a satellite would be. Until I saw one, and it was funny because I was with one of Stan's stepdaughters. I saw one that did this kind of fishhook maneuver and disappear. So I knew,
right.
okay, that's not a satellite. They don't do that. And she's like, I was like, well, what do you think that is? And she says, a satellite. And I said, well, didn't you see it move in that arc and disappear? And she says, well, they do that all the time. So she didn't realize that satellites couldn't do that because they'd watch things and see stuff
yeah,
like that.
Yeah, because it's so common an occurrence. To them, that's normal, you know.
Yeah.
To the girls.
Well, you know, pretty
and
strange.
And what were you going to say?
Well, I have one more person to bring on, and I'm almost out of time. So I hate to rush you, but I think the quantity is kind of hopefully impressive to the listeners of all these number of people that have had these experiences.
Yeah.
So thank you very much. You know, I'm just going to put you on. I'll keep you on if you want. And let me just bring on Victoria also.
Sure, that'd be great.
So you're unmuted and live. And let's bring on our good buddy. Victoria, are you there?
I am. Hi, Alejandro.
Hey, hello. How are you?
I'm doing well. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, I can hear you fine. And, you know, luckily it looks like you've been on a while, so you've been able to hear the last few people.
Yes.
So you and Heidi, actually, you guys have been spending a lot of time, and you've probably been one of the people, you know, that spent, I get to spend evenings here and there and stuff, but you guys have spent a lot of time with them. So, you know, in Stan's presence, you've seen the flashes, right?
I have. I've seen the flashes. I've seen probably an egg-sized orb fly in to the office and back out again.
Uh-huh.
This
orb that you saw, what did it look like?
Well, I've seen two. One was in the evening with the office lights on, and the other was in broad daylight, and it was a solid white mass of something that shot in front of me.
Uh-huh.
So, I mean, it was definitely something purposeful.
Yeah. Now, there's a video of one of these orbs on the website that he has posted. He's got a couple other, I know, pretty good videos, I don't think are on the website, of these orbs. That's pretty incredible, for sure.
It's very incredible because it suddenly just appears and flies in. The one in the office flew in, flew out. The other one I saw in the hallway kind of going towards his office where a lot of the activity occurs.
Mm-hmm. Have you experienced other activity around his office?
Around his office, around their home, around them. I'm kind of one of the newbies in the group. I met Stan and Lisa last June, late June, and, you know, that's been 7-plus months ago, and I've seen everything from, like Heidi said, the water turning on and off, chairs moving, lights going on and off. One of the first occurrences after the flash and the orbs I saw was my cell phone right in front of me was sitting there one moment, and the next moment it was, you know, with no one moving from where we were sitting watching TV, it was ended up in a picture box next to one of the chairs in their family room. One time it ended up, Heidi's ended up in the freezer once. You know, things moving on their own just appear, being there one minute and somewhere else the next minute. There have been shadow people or shadow figures that we've seen.
Now explain one of those incidents. And by the way, people can see a video of a chair moving by itself that they got. But, explain, you know, what you mean by shadow people and what you've experienced in regards to that.
Sure. And the chair that's moving on the website was before I even knew Stan and Lisa. I experienced chairs moving beyond that experience. But as far as the shadow goes, well, you know, we've all got our cameras with the night vision. And, you know, as dorky as it may sound, we sit around in the dark and view and take record to see the orbs. And I hear Heidi laughing because it is funny. But on numerous occasions, but on one very clear occasion there, I was sitting on the steps and Stan was filming, and you can hear Stan whispering, "What is it? I see something." And you can see this dark mass going in front of the cat's eyes, that the cat's eyes are glowing, and it's kind of shifting back and forth in front of the cat, and then it crosses in front of me, and he clearly caught that on tape. And so that was, you know, another experience. The flashes of light, I saw something appear in the flash of a light once. I mean, there's so many numerous things that have occurred, and, you know, with the implants that Stan had put in him this summer that migrated through his body that caused his cell phone you could hear it whistle from the cell phone. You could hear a feedback from when he would place his cell phone near this implant that he woke up with one day with a shaved mark on the side on his chest with a triangular imprint in his, or puncture mark, and over a 7-day period, that implant moved like four inches to under his armpit and then down 3 or 4 inches, absorbed in his body. Then we went on a trip all together camping at a friend's cabin, and I was walking around and saw this big crop circle on the side of the cabin, and we all checked ourselves, and Stan had enormous scoop marks out of the side of his body exactly where that implant had landed and reabsorbed into his body. And then, of course, you could see it fluorescing when you put it under black light, and it fluoresced for a very, very long time, and we've got, you know, many, many photographs of that.
Yeah, so to kind of give some background on some of this stuff, you threw a lot of stuff out, a lot of crazy, interesting stuff. But let's see, the shadow people, Stan has pictures on the website where they've seen this weird distortion, and then take a picture, and it looks like this shadow. So here's a witness who also saw one of those things in the video. I've seen the video too, and it's, I don't think it's on the website, but it's pretty amazing with the shadow moving in front of you.
It is, and I was there as well for that, and you couldn't see anything with your regular vision, but through that camera it was very clear.
Yeah, and then I've also seen, and he's got this on the website, where the marks that he comes back with fluoresce under black light. And to give some background, I guess it seemed as though there was some object under his skin in the middle of one of these, and then over a period of time, that object seemed to move through him just below the skin and I didn't know it affected his cell phone even, huh?
Yeah, it did. He would, remember Heidi, he'd hold his cell phone up to it and go, whee!
Yeah, it would make that weird interference electronic sound, yeah.
Yeah. Well, you guys, thank you for coming on the air. We were able to get a bunch of people. Now I don't feel so lonely when these people are calling me and telling me, you know, that I'm full of it with this stuff, or, you know, just to share that a lot of us are having experiences, and I think that speaks a lot to this case, and which is why I think people need to give it a second look, be patient, wait for more information, and to not just disregard it so quickly.
Yeah.
That's good science. It's good science to wait till you have all the evidence instead of throwing the throw everything out of the water until you've even seen all the evidence.
Exactly. And there
thank you, ladies.
Okay, thanks, Alejandro. Bye, Heidi.
Bye-bye.
You guys have a wonderful evening. I am out of time. I've got a few seconds to talk to the people. I will have another show next week. I'm not 100% on the guest, unfortunately. I'm trying to do that early, but as you people know, there's a lot going on, and so busy, busy, busy. So anyway, we're going to have a great show. Trust me, it'll be a great guest. The few people that I have on the line that will be joining us are wonderful. There will be more coming up on Stan. I didn't want to have Stan on the show because there were so many people that I needed to talk to that I wanted to get what they had to say out. But if you go to UFOthinktank.com, you get to hear an interview I did. You can see this on the front page. And I'll bring them on again with Stan and Lisa, because you've heard a lot about Lisa, Stan's wife, and you've heard about all of this craziness going on. What's it like for her to be living with all of this and to have this going on in her house? You can hear that on the website, on her show, or on that interview that I did. So you'll see Stan and Lisa interview. Go check that out and listen to that. And then I'll have them on again sometime here in the future where we'll be able to ask them all about this stuff. So I hope this gives you an overview. I hope this let you understand what life is like for these people, what life is like for us as friends, it is funny because, like they talked about, we'll go up there and sit in the night with our video cameras and our night vision looking for weird stuff, which is kind of weird to be spending the night at your friend doing that. But we all want to get, you know, some more evidence. But everybody, thank you for being on the joining me for the show. Have a lovely week. Talk to you soon.